This podcast is sponsored by Hercules Strong Guard Tires. Visit HerculesTiresCommercial.com to learn more.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across the USA and around the entire planet, we are Red Eye Radio. Get our Red Eye Radio app, download it today, and listen when you choose. All right, Eric, here we go. Economists now expect a lot more inflation going into the end of the year than they did just a couple of months ago. Excuse me. It sounded like I was dying there. A survey from the National Association of Business Economists said on Monday, core consumer prices, by the way, now think about this, Eric. Core consumer prices, which exclude food and energy cost.
We wouldn't want to include the things that people buy the most. Why would we do that?
Which exclude those two, are expected to be up 6% from the fourth quarter of 2020.
Oh, we don't include energy because the prices are often volatile. And
yeah, that's the point.
You morons.
Yeah. Think about that in statistics. We don't include that because they're very volatile. Well, yeah, but we want to know how they affected us in this quarter.
Yeah.
If they go down in the next quarter, we are intelligent enough to understand that they're volatile. But still, give us the don't BS us. Give us the full impact.
Well, you know what they do include? They include the prices of those luxury cars you see in the Christmas commercials this time of year that nobody ever gets.
Better gift wrap. That the guy
this Christmas, yeah. Make it memorable.
Memorable?
You just went into debt for 90 grand. Oh, no, she's not going to forget that. Trust me.
And sometimes it's that guy who was going to run for governor of Texas who's driving it.
Yeah, right. He gets his free. Yeah. Yeah,
it's
ridiculous.
I haven't seen any of those commercials yet.
No, I haven't either.
A car for Christmas. I haven't seen that.
Yeah. Oh, the car for Christmas. I thought you were talking about Lincoln.
No. Just in general, the cars for Christmas.
I've seen a few, yes. Okay. Yeah.
But I just love that core consumer prices, which exclude food and energy costs.
Mm-hmm.
It just drives me crazy. And why? Well, because we might give the public the wrong perception that inflation is going up too great. Well, no, you're not. If you're projecting that with food and in this, because you're already doing it by quarter,
right?
And then you do it by month,
right?
So you do inflation by the quarter, you do inflation by the month. Why can't you include food and energy costs?
I'll tell you who's keeping track of it: the American people.
In the September survey, the increase was forecast to be 5.1%. 61% of economists surveyed think that the Federal Reserve's preferred measure of inflation, the core PCE price index, will not cool down to the Fed's target of 2% until the second half of 2023 or later.
What did I say earlier?
Oh, I know, but didn't wasn't one of the questions the other day, well, wait a minute, when was the last time it was at 2%? You haven't hit that for the longest time.
Right. Well, you know, think about that. The second half of 2023 or later.
Two-thirds of the panel expect wage increases will keep inflation elevated over the next 3 years. Hey, Richard, you're maybe right. This could be permatory.
Yeah. Let's go, Brandon.
Wow. The Department of Labor will report the November Consumer Price Index this Friday. Prices are expected to rise 6.7% compared with November.
Yeah. Great job. Outstanding.
And now, that's total overall. That includes right. food and energy. So they do. I mean, they do. Mm-hmm. You can get that figure, mm-hmm. but they always promote. It seems like to me they always promote the other figure. Now they say core consumer price index is forecast at jumping 4.9%.
Which is still huge.
Yeah, the economists believe it's going to be 6.1%.
Right.
Though. They differ from the Department of Labor on that.
Right. Well, okay, that's...
Okay, but if that's for November, okay, that's November, not the whole quarter.
Right.
Okay, so, all right.
But if the Department of Labor is saying 4.9%, think about that. That's a massive number.
And here's the other thing, too, because we're being told that inflation is because the economy is growing gangbusters. Even while they view inflation as hotter, economists have been downgrading their projections for economic growth.
Well, I mean, again, it's because the policy isn't going to change. If the Republicans win in November of next year, there's not going to be much that changes either, except for the fact that Biden will be stuck with doing nothing but executive moves, which still have an impact on the economy. And barring a lawsuit to block him on those moves, again, it's the question is how much spending do they want to do next year? Here's where I could see them going as Democrats. The Build Back Better plan evolves into something else. And it includes many of the same things. But they focus on the direct benefits for people. They'll say things like, well, we want to pay for a paid family leave and we want to pay for daycare expenses. We want to pay for all this. Now, that's still going to drive inflation. But politically, do they believe that is going to be a winner next year?
Well, what I wonder, have they, because I one of the things is when the administration announced last week that they were raising tariffs, lumber tariffs with Canada,
right?
Doubling them.
Mm-hmm.
How much? There's two questions I have. How much will that increase the cost of a house? Because I haven't seen. Normally, we get figures on that. I mean, precisely how much will it affect mm-hmm. the cost of new housing out mm-hmm. there? Mm-hmm. Number two, how might that add to the inflationary pressures?
Yeah.
Because house building does add to, I mean, because it's mm-hmm. it's a part of it.
Right.
If house prices are still going up. So those would be the question. Not inflation, more economic growth. How would that affect the economic growth? You know, what could that possibly be? How could that possibly, if you're selling fewer homes because the prices go up, to that particular point, if interest rates start
going up. And then interest rates going up.
Interest rates going up. What's right. the projection over the next 5 years on housing?
Right. Well, I think short term. I mean, it would have an impact. We saw that the spike in lumber prices, the spike that we saw earlier this year, added $24,000 to the average cost.
Yes. Yep. They had that number that was out there. That's what I'm looking for again.
And so, yeah, if that's going up even further, supply chain issues, labor shortage, all this you add to it, then it's going to be, you can bet, significant money. I would have to guess somewhere in that range. But beyond that, I mean, you know, there's the economy. You see the slowing of the building of the homes. It takes 7 to 8 large trucks of materials to build the average single family home. And the entire supply chain there that would, I mean, just be eroded. If you have a huge, especially with interest rates going up, that's going to be a driver too. You're going to pay a lot more for that money you borrow for that home. If those interest rates go up, if what Powell said last week, goes into play. That's what we'll see. And that's a slowdown. So, I mean, that's what you're seeing is the makings of a recession. Will it get to that point? Only time will tell. In fact, you can only tell in the rearview mirror if you have been in a recession.
Let's go to Joe in Texas. Joe, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Yes, how you guys doing this morning?
Very good. Thanks for calling.
Good. You know, you were talking about wage inflation. Once wages go up, kind of like minimum wage being $7.50, now they're advocating $12 to $15 minimum wage, wages never come back down. Wages are there forever, right?
Well, yeah, that's yeah. Well, inflation is there forever. You don't normally see, for example, if inflation has gone up roughly 7% in this quarter from last year at this time, you're not going to see deflation come in that matches 7% by this time next year. So, yeah, you get the price, which is why we our friend Richard from Houston came up with the term. It's not transitory. It's permatory. And so so when you hear us say permatory, that's what we're saying. This is here to stay. So when the wages, and especially right now, you may, if you had a huge influx of labor into the economy, you might see at least a softening of wage increases. But the problem is they still have problems filling jobs. So yeah. That pressure, that inflationary pressure is going to be there. And I don't know how that ends.
No, I don't.
Because the one question that hasn't been answered for me is, and we've talked about this many times, that supply and demand of labor is the same thing as supply and demand for anything else. If there's very little of it, you've got to pay more for it. And if we don't have, because we talk about the fact, well, there's mismatch of skills. Okay, fine. There's a mismatch of skills out there. And there's also the mindset of there are jobs that Americans don't wish to do anymore. We talk about COVID and how that has changed the mentality. Look at all the, if you've gone through any of the, I think not just economic newspapers or magazines, but anything out there will tell you about how people have changed. Well, I worked at home for the longest time. I don't feel like going into the office anymore. I don't want to be working 60 hours a week. I only want to be working 30 hours a week. Just don't wish to be doing it anymore. I'm changing. And we also don't have the influx as we had for 60 years, 60, 70 years, women into the workforce, which was tens of millions of additional people in the labor force that were available. And we don't have a baby boom. We're never going to have a baby boom like we had post-World War II, which again affected the labor market from the 1960s all the way through the 1990s. That labor force came in. We don't have it.
No, and in the service industry, more and more people don't want to stay in that industry. They're right now looking to move and have moved on. And so the question is, how do you fill those jobs?
And if a lot of these jobs, the mismatch is because it's skilled labor, where do you get it from? And if you have a nation that has decided that we want a lot less legal immigration to this country from people even that have higher skills, and those people are not there, companies will move.
They would have to. But how you fill the service industry, I don't know. You can't outsource that.
No, you can't.
Automation will only do so much.
No, you're right. So then that will increase inflationary pressure because you get those people by increasing the cost will increase no matter what. Well, I'd like to work in the service industry, but not 40 hours a week, only 20 hours a week. Okay, we got to hire two people to work 20 hours a week and pay them a ton of money to do so. So you raise the cost anyway.
Right.
I mean, that's hypothetical. I'm just giving you an example.
But that's what we see in this, what they call the Great Resignation, people moving on to another job. In the tech industry, it's huge right now. The turnover is massive.
See, don't you like the stability of talk radio? A little bit of sarcasm in there.
Yeah. I don't know what these, you know, restaurants and other local businesses do. You know, small business can't afford to raise the wages. They can't afford the automation. You know, the owner is stuck themselves working, and you're seeing this, management and ownership working on the floor, working the actual job every day. Because you can't get people to work. They want to do something else. I don't know how you fix that.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Winter weather can wreak havoc on diesel fuel. Diesel fuel contains paraffin wax, which improves the fuel's viscosity and lubrication properties. The lower the temperature outside, the faster the paraffin wax in your fuel will gel up, which can clog your fuel filters and quickly put you out of service. Here's a cold weather consideration to keep you rolling as temperatures start to plunge. Make sure your fuel has been treated for freezing temperatures. If your fuel hasn't been treated, you should consider treating the fuel directly in the tank. Protect your equipment with winterized diesel fuel offered at participating TA Petro and TA Express fuel islands network-wide. Additional winter additives are also available at travel stores and TA truck service facilities. Visit ta-petro.com to learn more.
This maintenance tip is brought to you by TA Truck Service. More bays, more expertise, more solutions.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. We go to Charles in San Francisco. Charles, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio talking about inflation and labor and a bunch of different things. Hi, Charles.
How you guys doing? Hey, listen, before we get started, yes, I'm from San Francisco, but I don't agree with anything they do. So now that being said, you know, to a couple of Texans, we must be clear on that point.
Okay,
I'm with you guys.
Yes.
But that being said, hey, listen, you know, I really latched on to what you said about, you know, some missing skill sets or anything. And I'm not a brilliant person like, you know, you guys are, but here's my two cents, you know. They need to, in my humble opinion, reintroduce what they used to have in a lot of the high schools called the industrial arts. There's still a need for that segment, and I hear so much, you know, that that's lacking. We don't have that. It's all about computers. And I know back when, you know, I and maybe you guys might have taken those classes, some things has changed, but, you know, you still need to know the basics of what the heck a cross-cut miter is, if you're woodworking as an example. And, you know, yes, it's going to take time to reintroduce that. You know, in the interim, if it's something we need, you know, maybe a work visa, but there's something that's actually enforced. So once we're up to speed, you know, don't need it anymore. You may, what you may have given here, but that's it. You know, that's my opinion. I mean, you guys are the brains here. You know, I'd love to hear your comments.
Number one, you're wrong on that that item there. the rest was really, really good. Maybe over complimenting us just a little bit, but thank you so much.
Thanks, Charles.
And we did not immediately identify you as a particular political ideology because you called from San Francisco.
Yeah.
You brought up a number of different issues there. Here's the question that I have. How much has our culture changed? I took all the industrial arts. Mm. I worked as a machinist for the longest time, but took all the industrial arts as part of even in junior high and high school. Even though I was going into college, you know, preparatory stuff, you still had all the industrial arts. What is, even if you had them in the high schools today, and Charles did say it might take time to introduce them, how long would it take to introduce them? Can you bring that back into the culture of where we are today, industrial arts? I don't know.
Uh-huh.
all sit in our little delusional world. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Okay, two things to the last caller. You know, just started running that in around in my head. Two things that come to mind on two different topics. First off, when we look at the overall labor force that we have, and he mentioned, you know, temporary visas. That's always something, temporary visas for high-tech people to begin with. But let's set that aside for a moment.
Right.
Just look at the people here in the United States that live here, citizens of the United States, and the labor market there. And there's a lot of unknowns, so there's more questions than anything else. How big is the culture of moving away from working with your hands or doing manual labor? That's the first question that you have to look at. The culture of how you grew up. I grew up, you and I both grew up in basically blue-collar homes. Blue-collar, in my house, blue-collar home where my dad told me when I was 14 years old that, two things he told me. He said, you're going to find out people want to be BS'd. And I said, no, as the idealist, no, Dad, they want the truth. No, they don't. Dad was right. And the other thing was, he said, you're going to need to be good at three or four different things.
Right.
He said three at least, preferably four. And he said one will be technical, the other is getting your college degree, the other is sales, and then the other thing would be something that you might want to do in life that you might actually want to do. So I got my college, you know, got my college degree, but I also had technical experience. I knew how to run machines. You know, back then, I could do a ton of work on an automobile. Now it's like, huh? And so when I got out of college and couldn't find the job that I wanted, I ended up as a machinist. And there was I didn't look at it in any way except maybe a couple of my college friends says, really? You're not in radio? Weren't you in radio for a short time? Yeah, I didn't pay any money. And they were like, and so you're doing that? Yeah, here's what I make. Oh. And so to me, it never has mattered to me what I work at. That was the culture that I was brought up in. The culture I was brought up in is that you work. And I mentioned this last week, and I mentioned it to a couple of other people that I was golfing with when they were talking about privilege. I said, yeah, I had a couple of forms of privilege. I had parental privilege, which is my parents' behavior, that they were both there and they were disciplinarians. And the other one was I grew up in a culture of a work ethic where you worked, where work was just, you didn't think about it. It wasn't like, oh, I have to go to work. You worked. It's what you did.
Right.
It was so ingrained into the culture, and you did whatever you could do at that moment where somebody would hire you, the best thing that you could find that people would hire you at. And that's why when I first got my first, $13 check for cleaning toilets, I was the happiest SOB alive. And apparently I was too stupid to realize that I was overqualified for that job. So the culture is one thing. And I'm so grateful that I grew up in that culture. I'm so grateful that, I grew up in a community, in a society, in a family where you were told to overcome your fear, because there is nothing that has motivated me more than fear. Fear has been my greatest motivation. Fear that I won't succeed at something. Fear that I can't support myself. That's one thing there. What is the culture that exists today of young people, which will be the growing, labor force in this country? When you talk about people that are here, not bringing in people with visas or immigrants coming in, you know, what is the culture here? Which then you can extrapolate out, what jobs do they want to fill? What is the culture of getting your hands dirty? because a lot of the great jobs today, even you need to have college educations, you know, engineering, whatever, some of the great jobs, but you still have to get your hands dirty.
Yeah.
In order to do it. It's a combination of both. Do Americans actually want to do that? If I asked that question 25 years ago as a talk show host, I'd get run out of town saying that there are jobs that Americans don't want to do. Now everybody's in agreement with it, that there are jobs that Americans don't want to do. The other thing is, I never, I got, my father said this to me a couple of months ago, and this is after New York State was stopping with the enhanced unemployment. And he was still shocked. He said, I know what they're paying in enhanced unemployment. And even with the child tax credit and everything else that they started, he said, still, that's not enough to live on. Hmm. What are these people doing? How can they quit their jobs? And it's something that has totally surprised my father. What is it? Not the relocation. What do they call it? The resignation?
The great resignation.
Yeah, the great resignation. He said, where are these people going? He said, unless they're going to better jobs and going to them very quickly, who wants to put themselves at that, you know, that type of disadvantage or in that particular situation? Which brings us up to another point. One thing, again, part of our culture is debt. We hated debt. Mm. You and I asked John Taffer from Bar Rescue when we had him as a guest years ago. And I think you brought it up because we were talking about on Bar Rescue, these people, and they walk in and the owners, well, so, and you can see the video before, they're all screwing around and everything else. Mm-hmm. They ask, how much debt are you in because of this? $700,000. What? And how much are you losing a month? $9,000 a month. And you're playing around?
And there was one couple that was, you know, they were in debt $1 million, just under $1 million.
Was that the pirate lady?
I think so, the pirate bar.
The pirate bar. And I remember you asked, and from a former bill collector here, this was of great interest to me because when I was a bill collector, it made me absolutely paranoid of debt. And you asked a question. You said, John, it doesn't seem like they're as fearful of debt as they should be. And you asked a great question. Said, since we just deal with numbers now with our credit cards and everything else, and there's less time when you're actually pulling cash out when we used to be a cash society, are they just numbers to people? Do they view debt the same way? And he really didn't have an answer, but I think he thought it was a great question.
His perception was that, yes, they see it as numbers on a ledger, yeah, and they don't see it as for what it is. It's debt. It's something that you owe. And this is the problem, is that in today's society, the far left is built out this mentality that makes you, well, that makes some believe, they want you to believe, that everything should be provided for you. What did we hear over the last couple of years? Housing is a right. I really thought they were going to fight stronger on the eviction moratorium. I thought they were going to fight stronger. And maybe that'll pick back up in next year. I don't know, in the midterm. But this is what they were looking at. They were saying no one should own a property. That basically, if you occupy the property, then you have the right to it, and nobody should be able to kick you out.
Almost like let's legalize squatting.
Exactly. And that nobody should own this property. And then so if you do away with property rights, then everything is, I mean, think about that. It would be a massive, massive collapse of an economy. So if the mentality is that I'll get by and I'll find a way, then, I mean, where is that hunger that you get, that you used to get in, you know, the past generations that made you want to go out and live to survive and work to become free of debt, to become free of other people's decisions.
You know, that's another thing when you talk about, you know, the hunger that exists out there. When you have as many programs as we have today that supplement welfare, and understanding that, for example, if you look at the communist USSR when they were in existence, and the fact that when finally the USSR dissolved, the people that just after a couple of years wanted to, the number of people that wanted to go back to the old ways, mm-hmm. where they were basically told, this is your job, you have minimal sustenance. And the fact of that guaranteed minimal sustenance was more important to a significant portion of a society when they viewed that minimal sustenance just to keep. Now, they couldn't have the extravagant things in life, but everything, they were secure with the minimal sustenance. That was actually good enough for them. They would rather have that than the challenge of making it in a capitalist society where if you work hard, because I look in my life of everybody I know, irrespective of the situation that they found themselves in, and I'm talking about even, and not just talking about people my age, but the number of people I know a lot younger, single moms that had everything against them, that were willing to work, and now are starting to enjoy riches. And I mean more than just money, but the value and the riches of being able to work and being self-sufficient and have the feeling of being productive and the pride that comes with that, that they have enriched themselves as human beings further than they possibly could have ever done, which I believe is the correct way for human beings to be.
Right.
That there is a significant portion in socialism and communism that doesn't want that, that the minimal sustenance is enough for them. What in a society, and this is going back to my dad because we had this discussion, he said, I can't believe that this minimal sustenance that they got through the unemployment and even the child tax credit would be enough to make people say, well, I'm just going to quit work and just do nothing for a while.
Right.
Because I come directly from my father. That mindset I have, I learned from my father and my community and my street and my neighborhood and society in general at the time, because that was the mindset. How does that start affecting a workforce? Those are all the great questions. And I can identify what I believe the problems are. I don't know how great or how saturated society is with those problems. I know it exists. But how much of that is responsible for the mismatch of jobs? Because it doesn't matter whether we say we need to bring back vocational schools, it's whether people will go to them.
Yeah, there has to be an interest in that. Look, if you're a certified tech or mechanic, you can set your own hours right now, because they need to, on the retail end especially, they need to fill those bays. You can tell your boss when you want to work. And it's almost, I almost equate it to nursing. I have both nurses and mechanics in my family. And it's the same. You can decide when you want to work.
But it's hard work.
It's a hell of a hard job.
It's hard work.
And it's very, it requires extensive training on the fly.
Yep. And consistent
training. You're not going to go to school and then be done. You have to, in order to be certified, especially if you're working for an OEM, then you're going to have, or an OEM certified location, then you're going to have to pass that training, and they require that on a regular basis. Your school never ends. It's not easy.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. So all those things, I think, affect the job market. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens over the next 5 years here in the United States when it comes to the labor market and how it affects, you know, how it affects different different companies.
Yeah, I think small business obviously is going to feel it because they don't have that capital to invest in greater talent. I mean, the idea has been that a lot of entry-level jobs happen on that local level, and I don't know how you remedy that. It depends on, again, what younger people, and right now you go to a lot of these restaurants, and it's teenagers that are working.
Mm-hmm.
But they're saying, well, they've been leaning on us, and we're working now too many hours a week. We can't do this and school, and so that can only last for so long. And so what do you do next?
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Download our Red Eye Radio app and listen 24/7, 365. All right. Got to do this story. I can't believe I missed this from last week, and I can't believe this hasn't garnered more publicity. This was in National Review. Dominic Pino wrote it. Headline, Biden hasn't fixed the port crisis. Ships are just being counted differently. And this is just amazing. And he just starts out, he sets the table. And this is from last week. Last week, Tuesday, Secretary of Labor Marty Walsh visited Southern California and held a press conference with port leadership and California politicians at the Port of Los Angeles. They told a story of progress and cooperation in the ongoing supply chain crisis. They emphasized that ports on San Pedro Bay are some of the busiest in the world and have moved record amounts of cargo. Speakers made sure to give a shout out to the unions, especially the International Longshore and Warehouse Union. They credited the Biden administration with making progress on port congestion and passing the infrastructure bill to invest more in ports. It's a nice story and it made for some good photo ops, but is not true. Port congestion is not improving. Well, you know what happened, and this comes from the freight publications out there.
Mm-hmm.
This comes from the actual companies out there. You know what they're doing?
Mm.
What was happening is these cargo ships would come in, and it was first come, first serve. That if you came in and you were there, and that's why you saw all the ships off the coast, and you can see them all there within a certain radius. Well, port authorities began encouraging ships to line up outside the area, and they also began giving the ships what you call a calculated time of arrival.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be first come, first serve.
Right.
Now, ships get this when they leave their last port of call and begin their journey to Los Angeles or Long Beach. And so you're told the time you're supposed to dock.
Mm-hmm.
So what's happening is they're all out 500 miles.
Mm-hmm. You move the line out to where no one can see it.
You move
the congestion
is
now further offshore.
Exactly. That's all they've done. They said in a piece from yesterday, Freight Waves, which is a publication that looks at freight being, you know, shipped all over the world.
Very familiar with it, yes.
Broke down the numbers to get the real story. If you count only the ships waiting within 40 miles of the ports, because what they told you was, what the Biden administration said, the number of ships in the area outside of the ports is down 40%. They go, true. If you count the number of ships waiting within 40 miles of the port, which was the standard measure, it's true. It's declined by 40%. but more ships are waiting outside of that zone than inside of it. As of Tuesday of last week, FreightWave said there were 44 ships waiting within the 40-mile zone and another 50 waiting farther out. That brings the total up to 94 ships waiting, which is more than the 80 that were waiting when the new system of lining them up was started in mid-November. So when we got this whole story in mid-November, early November, about these 80 ships out there and they couldn't unload them, they simply changed the way that they come into port. There's actually more ships waiting, but the ships are further off, so they don't count in that area around the ports. That's how government solves the problem. Wow. Actual shippers have not been fooled by the new counting system. DHL service announcements to its global network have consistently demonstrated for the past few months that the port situation is not improving. The more important measure of congestion for shipping customers is how long a trip across the Pacific will take. To a certain extent, businesses can plan around delays if they can be at least confident when something will arrive. New data from Flexport shows the Trans-Pacific shipping times keep going up. In early mid-2019, it took roughly 45 days for cargo to depart Asia, cross the Pacific, arrive at a U.S. port, and then depart that port on some other mode of transportation. As of this week, it takes 105 days. That is a record high. And you're chuckling. Was in relation to?
Of course they know. You're going to tell the transportation industry?
Oh, you were talking about what I was reading.
It's much better. It's ridiculous to think that it changes anything. It's the movement of goods. This is about as stupid as it gets, because this is what they think they'll get away with. Oh, you see, well, now what we're doing is we're doing appointment only. By the way, all the truckers right now, shippers and receivers, appointment only, which means the shippers and receivers, truckers, don't laugh. Don't laugh. We need you to keep your eye on the road. Don't laugh too hard. Shippers and receivers are going to get you in and out. Every trucker listening right now is laughing at that because it's a joke.
And so it's actually gotten, and you've seen the headlines that the supply chain is easing, the supply chain is easing. You've seen that over the last couple of weeks, and then last week it hit again. It's not true.
It isn't true. It isn't. There's a number of things that are going on right now. The number of available truck drivers out there, not happening. You know, we're and what I mentioned, shippers and receivers that are holding drivers too long. And there has been, well, some have told me that there has been some progress there. I'll believe that when more and more truck drivers tell me that. But the fact of the matter is that supply chain issues are far from fixed. That's so stupid. Put them out in the middle of the ocean. That way they're not in line.
That is so typical from the left.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
Hide the problem.
That's right.
It's like in these liberal cities when they have, you know, for example, the Olympics or something like that. Okay, we need to hide the homeless for 2 weeks.
Yeah. Right. My daughter took her oldest daughter to New York City for her 16th birthday. And they had an election going on. You may have heard about it. The mayoral election. And what did they do? They put the homeless in a hotel, the same hotel she was in. She walked up to the desk and said, And so she called her travel agent and said, did you know about this? And she said, no, there was no disclosure. And so she put her in a beautiful hotel a few blocks away. But they take the homeless off the streets. They clean everything up right about. This is They believe they're, and this is sweeping everything under the rug. Well, on a supply chain, you're not going to fix that, because the people that take everything from the ports and deliver it to our shelves know better. That's why DHL, in this article that you just read, they know. They all know. Let's not be stupid about this.
So, again, the Biden administration is lying about the backlog of cargo ships.
Yes.
They're telling you, and they have stated it's getting better,
right,
when they know it's not.
Same guy that lied about Afghanistan all the way through, said his genuine, and then afterwards said everybody was on board, and of course they weren't, and wanted the then president of Afghanistan back in July to help him lie about it as well. Yes, that same Biden is lying about the ports. Shocked. This is ridiculous. This is the incompetence of Joe Biden. You know, you could fix this. You could go in and tell California, you waive that whole thing on older trucks for the ports so that they can get in there and they can deliver the freight to the American people. That's not going to happen, though, because you're not going to have Biden going after the state of California with Governor Climate Change himself, Gavin Newsom. That's not going
to
happen.
But this goes back to, it's in, under the only way that you are going to ease this supply chain problem is to do everything that the Democrats don't wish to do.
Yeah.
And the Democrats won't do.
Right.
But the Democrats know that the political pressure is there, so their only recourse is to lie to the American public about the supply chain and the cargo ships, and so that's what they did last Tuesday. They lied about it.
Right.
And they lied about it. But, well, we didn't lie about it. Well, we simply changed the way in how we count. Yeah, but you use that to say that the problem was getting better.
It's not getting better.
Not getting better. Maybe that's a new woke math.
Yeah. Well, here's what I'm guessing happened. That they sought some assistance on this from somebody who knows a little about supply chains. And what you have with at the retail level is on time in full, OTIF. And that means that the loads that show up at that store, at that location, have to be on time in full. In other words, they have to be then Wednesday, not Tuesday, not Thursday, Wednesday. And all of that cargo has to be in full, which means intact. And that could have been what triggered this. And, you know, hey, look, we'll rearrange it and it'll make it look like there is no huge, massive backlog of ships waiting to port. We'll just push them out in the middle of the ocean. And then we'll set appointments and pretend like we're doing it as the retailers do it. Yeah.
I mean, it's just, the BS is just flying, you know, big
time.
It's
moronic.
Yeah, it is.
It's beyond moronic. But it's Joe Biden. It's Joe Biden. And he's a complete moron. He is an absolute. He's the poster boy for morons. It doesn't get any worse. His incompetence is mind-boggling.
Yeah. It's not to solve.
Just talking about him makes me feel stupider.
It's never been about solving problems. It's again, you know, this is the abstract versus the reality.
Yeah.
You know, the abstract is, okay, yeah, we can straighten this all up. Well, how can you do that? Well, you'd have to loosen union rules.
No.
You'd have to loosen.
Doesn't care about unions anymore.
You'd have to loosen the truck rules, and you're not going to do any of that. So, What's our solution? We lie about. We lie to the American public.
Right.
What's going on?
We sweep everything under the rug. In this case, we're going to sweep all the backlog of ships out into the ocean.
Right. And then say the problem has been solved. They're not here yet.
Right. See, they're not waiting.
Because they've been told they can't.
Right.
Just amazing. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So, Chris Cuomo going to sue CNN.
All right. He wants to get paid.
I almost said so. He's going to sue, not so.
Mm-hmm.
Is he going to sue CNN for $18 million, is what's being reported by the New York Post and others. And the reason he's going to sue, I burst out laughing when I saw this yesterday. And I hope he's successful.
Yeah, no, I hope he wins this.
And you're like, really? Yeah, because what he is saying is, hey, the president of CNN, everybody knew that I was lying.
Yeah.
They were all in on it. They know what's going on.
Oh, yeah.
They knew I was lying.
Mm-hmm.
They knew the things that I was doing that was immoral. Because CNN is coming back and saying, you have a morals clause and you can't do something like this. Well, sure I can, because you approved it. You knew it was going on.
You were part of it.
And therefore, you can't use the morals clause to say I get fired and don't collect for cause, because I was just following. You knew my morality, and you agreed with my morality.
Yeah.
You knew the lies. You knew that I was attempting to find dirt on the alleged victims of sexual abuse and assault and harassment of my brother. You knew about it. You approved it.
Well, you know, look, it's about the fact that management at CNN, the word got out that management was aware. If we had not learned that management had learned something, they probably wouldn't have fired him. This fell on Zucker.
Mm-hmm.
This is why he was fired, because you were shining the light on what management knew. That's the whole point. He may win this. He might win this. And if we had never learned about what they knew at CNN, that management, you know, was learning about it, then this would have been a totally different story.
Because what Cuomo's spokesperson is saying is, look, they were so close, they communicated about everything.
Right.
And he knew.
Which they would.
And he knew exactly
yep.
what Cuomo was involved with and what Cuomo had done and didn't fire him before. For the longest time.
Here would be my question. How many, because you know they're texting each other, right? So he's probably got a record of communicating.
Oh.
And if he does, he'll win it.
Yeah.
He just might.
And we just wondered because CNN is being bought by, what, Discovery?
Right.
And John Malone is part of it, and he was told.
Liberty Media.
Liberty Media, and he was saying last week that, you know, he'd like to go back to the CNN. He didn't say he would, but he said we wish you could get back to the CNN of old when they were actually covered news.
Right.
But all I know is that, and that was before Cuomo got fired. Now the mess with Don Lemon coming up.
Yeah.
About his alleged victim.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And what was the other? There was something else that came up yesterday, too, about Don Lemon. I forgot what it was. There was another issue on
Jussie Smollett. Right.
That he was texting him back early
right.
on in that. So they're getting involved in all these different stories.
Huge stories.
Yep.
Here's your forecast.
More rain is expected for the deep south today from Louisiana to the Carolinas. That system will become stationary and deliver more showers through Wednesday. There's a slight risk of severe thunderstorms over parts of the lower Mississippi and Tennessee valleys. Also for tomorrow, Wednesday, further north along the Atlantic seaboard, look for mixed precipitation from northern Virginia into Philadelphia, New York, and Boston. For today, areas of snow are limited to portions of the Midwest, with lake effect snow downwind from the Great Lakes and light snow over parts of the Northeast. To the Pacific Northwest, where rain and higher elevation snow continues into the northern Rockies, and that system is moving southward into California and the Great Basin and into parts of the central Rockies by tonight. There are rain chances today from San Francisco to San Diego along California's coast. The National Forecast from Red Eye Radio, I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Lazy and prone to long lunches, Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Let's go to Charles in Los Angeles, who says he works at the Port of L.A. Charles, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Hey, good evening. Morning, Gary and Eric, a long-time listener.
Thanks.
First-time caller. Yeah, I'm down here at the port right now. Yeah, usually what goes on, they have, you know, a bunch of labor operating on these ships, and so they have a shortage lately with the skilled labor operating cranes and the top handlers. And so, I mean, basically, the Pacific Maritime Association has room for, I don't know, so many employees that they give benefits to, and then after that, they use the casual labor. And so what's going on is they're running out of the permanent employees, and they don't want to give the casuals too much time because then they'd have to give them benefits. And so they're running into issues like that with, you know, things take a little bit longer to unload than they normally would lately.
Yeah, and the truck
fleets. Well, it's maybe a little bit longer to unload, but the entire process across the board is over, is what? Record levels.
4 days.
105.
Well, I mean, when it's.
Go ahead.
When a ship comes in, it takes about 4 days to unload everything.
Right.
Because these things are a quarter mile long. They have about 8,000 containers on them.
Yeah.
And so with so much labor, like I was, I'm tasked with disconnecting the ships from shore power. And so I was gonna, basically go up. I saw the port, they have pilots go up on the ships and navigate them through the channel. And so the pilot went up the gangway, and then I noticed that he came right back down. They turned him away because they didn't have enough lashers to lash the first three rows of containers that go up on top of the decks. And so basically the disconnect got held up by 6 hours or 7 hours, so the ship didn't leave until, you know, the morning, when it should have left at 3 o'clock in the morning. It left at like 8 or 9.
Right.
So yeah, things take a little longer. And the harbor's full. I mean, they don't have hardly any room for ships. There's hardly any room for the containers. So yeah, there's issues with getting the containers off the dock. One of the PCMC, Pacific Crane Maintenance Corporation, that basically negotiates the crane maintenance employees, they basically, what I think the owner of that company has opened up a side over here in where those two domes used to be. When you go over to Vincent Thomas Bridge, there was those two domes over there. That was like a coal handling dock, and that got scrapped. And so there, it's just basically empty dirt out there. Well, they went out there with bulldozers and leveled it off and put gravel out there, and they're stacking containers out there just to make room, you know. So it's created little offline little businesses for other people that are kind of entrepreneurial in that respect.
Interesting. Yeah, of course, there's the rule from the California Air Resources Board on older trucks, and so the older trucks aren't allowed to go into the ports anymore.
Well, but they can go into that little off site place. See, that's
right.
That's
the private sector kind of finding its way, right?
And yes, exactly. You know,
and so yeah. It's likely not going to be the long term remedy is the problem. You know, again,
you're right.
It's kind of an overflow situation, if you will. Yeah.
Yeah, there's only so much real estate around here.
Right.
And you know, like some of these terminals are due for a little bit of expansion, and
yeah,
but who, you know, that takes years.
Sure.
So
sure.
Yeah, until they get more room.
Right. Yeah.
This is where we're at with the everything that we buy coming from the left. But you know, but going back to the I see ships come in here. Eric and Gary, I see ships come in here and leave, and 2 weeks they're back. Hmm. So it really only takes a couple weeks to go across.
Right.
And back.
Yeah. Yeah, the backlog is there at the ports more and more.
Yeah, exactly.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Well, Charlie.
Here'd be the question I have. What's the difference between right now, and I won't even use the COVID year, but 2019 when the economy was humming pretty good? Why are the backlogs now at these ports?
Is it labor?
It's probably a combination of that and maybe what some of the stores might be ordering. The stores might be ordering like excess of stuff that always seems to be flying off the shelves. So, you know, they might be ordering extensive amounts of certain items. I don't know. Hmm. I only see just containers and ships out here.
That's cool. Yeah, yeah, it's unfair to ask you that.
Sure.
It's unfair to ask you that macro question.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
But no, thanks so much. We really appreciate it. And
thanks,
and good
Charlie.
Luck. And thanks for
appreciate
listening.
It.
We appreciate it.
Yeah.
All right.
Interesting take.
Yeah.
Live from the ports in Los Angeles. Let's go to Charlie. But it is what we talked about, this perfect storm of regulatory items that's been on. I can't remember how long ago it was, but it was a long time ago when they started talking about the aging port fleet, which is that means the trucks that go into the ports and carry stuff out of the ports. And California Air Resources Board has been relentless. And of course, they finally got their way. So older trucks can't go in there. And as Charlie points out, well, you have this overflow situation. Basically, you know, it's like an overflow situation where they can go into other areas where these containers are being offloaded. But that's not a long-term remedy. That's not going to fix this problem. And you have more and more in the trucking industry that won't run California because of CARB. They just won't. You know, it's really strict and really costly. And the people of California pay for that.
You know, you've had a number of freight magazines and capitalism magazines analyzing the U.S. ports and saying they should be much more highly automated than they are today, and the union's keeping them from doing it. That's one of the criticisms that you're getting. One way or another, this cannot be allowed to happen. You need to have ports that can work and work efficiently and get the products here.
Well,
it's that simple.
You know, and you had DeSantis talk about it, and he said, look, we want to open up our, you know, areas here in Florida, and we want to create more port room here in our state. The question is that how efficient is that?
Probably not, because the
shipping lanes.
You're coming through the Panama Canal.
Right. And
from Asia.
And that's going to be even more costly. So that's not a long-term remedy. Texas, the same thing. It's not just not going to happen. And so the question is then, what happens long-term? And, yeah, the automation should be there.
Well, the problem is it doesn't help. You know, whatever, and again, I'm sure those that have studied the ports could sit in all day, talk about what they believe the problem, are at U.S. ports today. It doesn't help the government line that they are solving the problem, that the problem is being solved when it's not being solved.
Right. Yeah, no, it's not a solution.
And that's the point that we brought up from National Review, stating the government's lying to you. The backlog isn't any better.
Right.
It's just they've changed the way that they count the numbers, and they've told the ships basically to stay further out.
Right. Yep. And that's, in other words, you know, don't clog the ports, but that's not going to be, again, that's not going to be a long-term solution. They're not going to stay there offshore, you know, out hundreds of miles offshore for very long. They can't afford to do that.
You know, we've been talking about the ports and also talking about jobs out there and where we're going and what we, you know, what we're teaching in our schools today and trade schools and things like that. And what the American, what our society, you know, what we wish to work at in the future. Well, this story relates to it all. A top Democratic economist says the rise of the anti-racist, which means racist, math curricula is a national security threat. Larry Summers, who is part of the economists that have said, we told Biden the inflation was going to happen.
Right.
We told him not to do all this, and he did it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Larry Summers, a Harvard economist who led the National Economic Council under Obama, shared a letter on Monday signed by almost 600 academics that condemns the rise of woke math initiatives in K through 12 schools. This is where critical race theory comes into math now. The letter says that the initiatives have devalued foundational math courses such as algebra and limited advanced math courses to reduce achievement gaps. Summers called rigorous math instruction an economic and national security imperative, noting that in China, math standards are not subject to continued erosion by social justice warriors. Radical education activists want to purge math curricula of allegedly racist practices, which are showing your work and arriving at the right answer in math. Again, radical education activists want to purge math curricula of allegedly racist practices, which include showing your work and arriving at the right answer.
What? By the way, why weren't these activists in play when I was taking math in high school?
I know.
I would have gone to more protests.
You know, a buddy of mine sent me a story from New York about there was this antique train that was stolen. It was an antique kids train, like an amusement park.
Hmm.
And he just sent me the story, and I started going through the story, and the guy who runs this historical train museum is a guy I hung around with in my first 2 years of college. I had not seen him since college. And I'll never forget, I remember him because we used to be at the student union at 6 a.m. for our 9 a.m. calculus class, doing our homework and frying our brains trying to figure out calculus.
Yeah.
And
it was always about show your work.
Yes, it was about show your work. Everything was about show your work and getting it right.
That's so racist.
And so even this is how insane Democrats have gone. That finally, you're slowly but surely, Democrats are coming on and going, this is insanity. Well, it's racist to come up with the correct answer in math.
Yeah.
Think about some of the racist to
make them, anyone, show their work.
See, think of some of the things that the Democrats now are saying are racist.
Everything. What's not racist, according to Democrats these days?
Showing your work. Getting math right. Wow. Work ethic.
Mm-hmm.
Initiative.
Mm-hmm.
All these things are racist. Are they saying that not completing a task and laziness is non-racist?
I don't think they've gotten that far yet.
Give it a minute.
Everything is racist.
866-90-RED-EYE.
There's a new Shell Rotella engine oil for gas engines. Shell Rotella Gas Truck is available now. Megan Pino, Shell Rotella Global Brand Manager, tells us what was behind the development and more about the product.
Obviously, Shell Rotella's heritage is heavy-duty engine oil, and that will remain our heritage. And we know that our customers work hard, but they also love to play hard. And many of our customers also own a gasoline-powered pickup truck, SUV, and perhaps as a personal vehicle or as part of the business. We also know that truck owners use their trucks for different purposes than a car, to be able to tow something, whether that's an RV or a boat for fun on the weekend, for, you know, your business, for hauling equipment. So you're doing something different with your truck than you are with a car. And so why use the same motor oil that you would in your car as your truck? There are three viscosity grades, 0W20, 5W20, and 5W30, which covers any gasoline-powered pickup truck or SUV in terms of the manufacturer recommendations.
For more, go to Rotella.com. This engine report is a service of Shell Rotella.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Reading here, you see the front page of the Drudge Report. China seeks military base in Atlantic. We know Russia and, you know, that situation going on with Ukraine, Iran, and if you've been paying attention to the whole deal with the Iran deal, where they've admitted we haven't abided by anything.
Of course.
And we're still negotiating with them. It's just, we'll get to that more on future shows here, but just shake your head. We haven't gotten to the international. It's almost as if everybody's ignored Biden when it comes to anything international, as nobody wants to deal with it.
Well, we have so much of a domestic mess right now.
Yeah.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.